Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Black Brick. Last week, we read... I snorted. Other than killing Vargo, the damage Beltran has inflicted on Diagon is minimal because Peck is using Beltran to take control of the company. A thought occurred to me, and I don't know why it had not crossed my mind before. Beltran had not been eager for Shannon and me to continue our investigation into Bruce Andrews' murder. In fact, he'd made sure that we had other things to occupy our time. Was he behind Andrews' death as well? Assassinating the CEO is not generally how these things work. Can you prove Beltran was behind Vargo's assassination? She asked. When I did not answer, she continued, I'm not saying you're lying, but things are not matching up. You have missed something, I said. Any direction this goes, Peck will come out the winner. I did not see a way out of that. Peck was positioned too well. I had played all the cards I had for Peck and had not been able to do much damage. Shannon's cover had been ruined, but Peck would walk away untouched by my accusations. Given his aptitude with the media, I would not be surprised if he came out ahead. Are you aware of any connection between Ronan Wright and Beltran? I asked. No, she said. Wright has never come up on our radar. We need to talk to him, I said. If he's Peck's biggest threat now that Vargo is dead, he might be our only friend. And now? 31. Chris and I parked in the closest parking garage for the new Diagon headquarters. It was almost a 10-minute walk from there to the main building. As we passed the grizzly bear exhibit, I examined it, trying to decide where Martinez had come from the other day. If there were secret passageways here, it would be useful to know about them. There were several doors into the enclosure, but I could not tell just by looking at them which one he had used. A few minutes later, we walked by a crowd of people that were looking down into a lion habitat. I shook my head, wondering if there was another corporate headquarters in the world with its own zoo and aquarium. Chris gasped when we entered the building. And I did my best to keep my jaw from dropping. It was hard not to gawk. The lobby was 6 stories high and lavishly decorated. Chandeliers that were several stories tall hung from impossibly small cables. It was the most ostentatious display of wealth I had ever seen. I remembered reading that Diagon employed a full-time staff of over 200 people to take care of the aquarium and the zoo. The aquarium circled the reception area, and in the middle of the room was an alligator display with bridges crossing over to where security officers waited to clear all employees and visitors. A modern-day moat. I would have snorted with laughter the petty imperial symbolism, but it did not feel like a joke, especially with Peck positioning to become CEO. A line of schoolchildren holding hands followed behind a teacher, and people were bunched on the bridges over the alligators. The children made me think of Lisa Kurt, and I renewed my determination that innocent people, especially children, would never die again on my watch. This is shameful, Chris said. I nodded in agreement. We were stopped by security on the other side of the bridge over the alligator pit. I handed them a newly created driver's license. Chris had offered to help me with my new identity, but I had refused and insisted we use somebody not connected with her company. Despite my numerous attempts to get Chris to reveal more about her employer, she continued to dodge the topic. I was getting annoyed with her refusal and figured there was a reason why she did not want to tell me. But I could only handle one problem at a time. After I was done with Beltran and Peck, I would focus on figuring it out. The security guard confirmed our appointment, gave us guest passes, and waved us through for our meeting with Ronan Wright. I was relieved that he had not given us a second glance, and surprised that Diagon did not make everybody pass through metal detectors. That was a fact I had checked on before we came, but it was still surprising. Our cover was that we had come from another company seeking investment capital. Wright was in charge of funding, and so it was a plausible enough cover story. My plan was to question Wright to learn what he knew. If we determined he was in danger, we were going to protect him. If he was involved, we would grill him for information, incapacitate him, and make a break for it. It was not the greatest plan, and as much as I wanted to take Peck apart, I needed to deal with Beltran and his teams first. The best way to do that was to convince Ronan to work with us in setting a trap for Beltran. The guard directed us to a nearby elevator and told us to go to the 25th floor. I caught a glance of a woman who looked familiar as the elevator door shut. Our eyes locked. It was Shannon, as a brunette. beautiful as ever. Even with my disguise, I was sure she recognized me. Could Beltran be here to assassinate Ronan already? I nudged Chris. See that? We may be out of time. Chris swore. This is going to be messy. I looked around the elevator, suspicious that other people may belong to Beltran. But I did not recognize anybody else. With Shannon here, Cherry and Tom would not be far away. When we got off on the 25th floor, I did not want to take a seat as the receptionist suggested, but I did anyway. What else could I do? It was not going to help matters if I pulled a gun on her and demanded she take me to Wright. Every time I heard the elevator doors ding, I expected to see Shannon step out, so I kept my hand within reach of my pistol. It is not too late to call this off, Chris said. Leave if you want, I said, glancing at the receptionist who was staring at me. I'm going to keep them from killing Ronan. I smiled at the woman behind the reception desk and hoped that she had not been able to see through my disguise. She smiled back shyly. The absolute idiocy of what we were doing struck me. What was I hoping to accomplish with a partner that I barely knew against a group of highly trained people, people that I'd counted as friends and associates up until several weeks ago? They are ready for you. The receptionist favored me with a smile and all but ignored Chris as we followed her to a spacious conference room that seemed to take up half the floor. The large mahogany table could have sat more than 40 people, though there were less than a handful at the moment. The windows on the wall opposite the door went from the floor to ceiling and featured an impressive view of the city. There was another exit to the room on the far side. A short, older woman wearing a crisp business suit who sat at the head of the table stood to greet us. Several other people sat on either side of it. Something about a man on the left tugged at my memory. "Mr. Wright is running late," the woman began, but she stopped when she saw the pistol in my hand. Everybody was looking at me now, but I did not care. I only had eyes for the man who had taken me captive while my mom had bled. His hair was gray now, and he had a few more wrinkles, but it was him. The image of him standing over the body of the man I'd killed flooded back into me. The acrid smell of the gunpowder still hung in the air, and I could feel the duct tape he'd used to bind my hands behind my back. My mouth went dry, and I narrowed my eyes. "Do you know who I am?" I demanded, walking around the table as the man stood. The large window framing him would have presented a tempting proposition, but the glass was likely tempered. "Do you have any idea?" I was yelling now. The other door opened and somebody else walked into the room. I did not turn to see who, because I did not care. "Hold it there, Jake," Beltran said. "Things are more complex than you understand." The other people in the room were not surprised to see Beltran. Was he here undercover, or had he come out into the open? "The damage you have done," I said, trying to keep my voice steady as I gripped my pistol. "The lives you have wrecked. This ends here." "Your real parents are not dead," Beltran said. "I don't care about the people who put me up for adoption," I said to Beltran, not taking my eyes off my father's murderer. My dad's corpse was already stiffening when I tried to resuscitate him. I would not put my mother in danger, regardless of my doubts about her. Beltran probably already knew she was alive, but I would be cautious still the same. His blood spattered onto me when I tried CPR. "Do you realize what that does to a kid? I still have nightmares." "It was self-defense," the man said. He had not moved since standing up. I could see a pistol peeking out of his suit coat. "He came at me with a knife, you understand. I did not have any other choice." It was a lie. There had not been a knife with my father's body. I remembered the scene quite well. I did not detect any fear in his face, which I took as a sign that he had killed before and would kill again without hesitation. This man had let somebody else rot in jail for a crime he had committed. "Larry," Beltran said to my father's killer, "it's time to own up to what you did." Larry glared at Beltran but turned his attention back to me. "Your father and I, we were old friends, and we had been working together for years. He knew the drill. I'm not sure what happened. He just went crazy." "Jake," Beltran said, "I understand. Larry killed your parents. You're a wanted man. You are not in a position to see that Larry is brought to justice. If you need to kill Larry so we can move on to other things, that is just fine." A look of shock crossed Larry's face, and his eyes narrowed when he took in Beltran. "This is why you wanted me here?" Larry demanded, hand moving towards the inside of his coat. If he pulled his gun, I was not sure who he would go for, Beltran or me. "Even now, you're still pulling my strings. I should never have let you convince me to be part of that in the first place. Chris, I said, Larry is armed. Please take his gun. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I realized that Beltran had known that we would be here today. How? Chris? Had she been working for him this whole time? No, I could not let my doubts overcome me. Beltran was here because of Ronan Wright, who had been the next obvious target for me. Beltran had planned on me coming after him. I had not been suspicious when I had been able to make an appointment with Wright because I did not think that Beltran had infiltrated Daigon to such a degree that he could walk freely in the open. My eyes became slits as I regarded Larry. If Beltran wanted me to kill him, maybe that was a sign I should not. Chris had not taken more than a step or two when Larry went for his gun. I pulled the trigger of my pistol without thinking and went numb as I watched him fall. The window behind him cracked and was splashed with blood, but remained intact. The gunshot hurt my ears, and the other people around the conference room covered theirs. Somebody yelped, but I did not see who. As Larry slumped to the floor, almost everybody else backed away from me. This was something I'd wanted to do for more than a decade, but I felt hollow inside. My father was still dead. Beltran moved closer, and I trained my pistol on him. Larry deserved that, Beltran said, cool and collected. You are the victim of an unfortunate misunderstanding. My hands shook as I looked at Beltran over the top of my pistol. Whether I was shaking from the adrenaline or anger, I could not tell. How many times had I thought about killing Beltran since my team had betrayed and framed me? I walked around the table towards him, careful to keep my gun trained on him. I stopped several steps away from where he stood. That was convenient, I said. My father's killer, delivered on a silver platter. This does not change things between us. There is much you do not know, Beltran said. I don't know. Seems simple enough to me, I said. You had Larry kill my parents so you could recruit me. You put us together so I would kill him. My finger tensed on the trigger. I am tired of your lies and manipulations. Nobody mourned the loss of your parents more than me, Beltran said. They were close friends. Maybe Beltran did not know my mother was alive after all. I could not help but hope she had not abandoned me, that she had not been in on Beltran's little plan. The thought of her betraying my father to his death made me want to retch. Larry was working for you, I said, depressing the trigger slowly. That makes you responsible. You set me up for Vargo's death and blamed everything else on me. Your father worked for me, too. I did not tell Larry to do what he did, but I can understand your perspective. Liar! I could not bring myself to believe that my father had worked for Beltran. I will not deny I've done a lot of lying, Beltran said, and I don't blame you. You can kill me and have your revenge, or you can listen to what's really going on and make a decision that makes sense, a decision for your future. The other people in the room stood against the far wall. They had moved when I'd shot Larry. Chris was keeping an eye on them and looking antsier by the minute. I did not blame her. This was supposed to have been a conversation with Wright, not the day of vengeance it was quickly becoming. Our mission to kill Vargo was legit, Beltran said. He was tied to criminal activities too numerous to count. But as with many things, I had a dual purpose. I ordered Shannon to break up with you. Yes, I knew about you guys. I had your own team set you up as a test. I had planned on your capture and wanted to see how well you would hold up under federal pressure. But things got a little out of hand. His explanation only made sense if you did not value human life, something that Beltran excelled at. While there was a sincerity to Beltran's words about wanting to test me, his eyes shifted while he spoke. No, Beltran may have wanted this to be a test, but Peck was more practical than that. Peck needed somebody to blame so he could take the reins of Daigon, and had made Beltran get with the program. Peck did things his own way. I wondered if Beltran and Peck had been at odds with one another about what to do with me. Beltran had wanted one of his famous tests. Peck had needed a scapegoat. I looked at the other people in the room, trying to gauge their reaction to Beltran's confession. Some fidgeted and looked uncomfortable, but if I'd been hoping for surprise or outrage, I was disappointed. Beltran was not here undercover. He worked with these people. He worked for Daigon. I was supposed to be caught, I said, staring at the others, looking for some hint that they had not known about this. To the last one, they were scared, but none of them were surprised. Yes, Beltran said. We would have sprung you after you'd kept your mouth shut for a few days. I'm sorry I ruined your plans, I said. I'm not, Beltran said. I can't deny that you've done some damage. but I've never been more proud of one of my recruits. You've done a great job and have not only managed the media, but kept us on the run. It is safe to say you've passed your tests. Welcome back. We have a special position for you. The others in the room expected that I would rejoin. Even Chris looked doubtful. I was not yet ready to show my hand, but as long as Beltran was talkative, I had additional questions. I would sort out the truth from the lies later, once he had everything on the table. We are internal security for Diagon, I said. We clean out the rot. Beltran nodded. That is exactly right. Think of Diagon as a government. And why not? We practically own several nations in Africa and South America. We are the third largest corporation in the world with revenue greater than most countries. Can you imagine what would happen if this company were to fall into the wrong hands? What a madman could do with the weapons we make, the data we collect. It is a scary proposition. That is where you and I come in. That does not make sense because Diagon is not yet 5 years old, Chris said. Jake was recruited more than a decade ago. It was the first time she had spoken. Beltran regarded her with a calculating look that he frequently got when deciding what to do about a particular problem. Would she die if I agreed to join him again? Your friend is correct on her timelines, Beltran said, but I'm not going to get into that. You need to decide. Are you in, or are you out? Why did you let Martinez and Payne kill so many people? They don't work for me. It was a mistake to wait for your team to discover his treachery. But I do not condone the deaths of innocent people. I snorted. Forgive me for not believing you. Shirley Peck told you about that picture. The one of you at the mass grave. Beltran nodded as if prepared for the question. That was taken out of context. I was on a mission and had to maintain a cover. If it is any comfort, I killed the man behind the genocide. Beltran reached for a remote and turned on the television. I owe you this much. Shannon came onto the screen. She had blonde hair and was sobbing. It was tough to watch, and I gripped my pistol tighter. This was recorded the night we determined that things had gone wrong with our plan. She cares for you. She loves you. Come back to her. Come back to us. His blatant attempt at manipulation snapped me back to reality. I thought of Beltran's deceptions and all the horror that had resulted. Before I realized what I was doing, I had pushed Beltran against the wall. The others in the room became a blur as I focused on him. I'm done, I said. There was a commotion behind me, but I did not turn. I was too busy jabbing my pistol into Beltran's gut. I could feel his bulletproof vest. I jabbed harder. I wanted him to feel pain. I brought my pistol up, intending to hit him. Stop, Shannon said, or your pretty friend dies. I looked over my shoulder and saw that Tom and Cherry were with her as well. They had pistols trained on me. Shannon had Chris against the far wall by the door, a pistol to her head. How's it going, Jake? Tom asked, the smirk on his face complimenting the pistol he had pointed at me. What Beltran said is true, Cherry said, the concern on her face providing an interesting contrast to her pistol. You will understand once you've had time to calm down. Please, Shannon said. I miss you. Her words hardened my resolve. They are playing you, Chris begun, but Shannon cut her off by a slap to the face. I winced, but Chris looked away. I focused on the more important issue. Beltran. I had been debating what to do about him. There was no doubt in my mind that he was an evil man. Turning Beltran over to the police would not work. He would either pay them off or he would escape. Either way, he would continue his grisly work. I had been recruited by Beltran years before Diagon was formed, and Beltran would continue his special brand of recruiting as long as he breathed. If Diagon went bankrupt, Beltran would still be there. More parents would die, and more children would be orphaned. I almost killed him at the thought. I tried to not think about all the homes he would wreck if given a chance. While I agreed that the world would be a better place without Beltran, I hesitated. If that was the line of logic I followed, where would it end? Martinez and Payne had to go as well. Surely I'd go after Peck, too. Once I got them, if I was still alive, would it be over? Could I just walk away from the man I would have to become to do these things? That pathway led to nowhere. If I did this, would there be a difference between the men I was killing and me? All the killing I had done up to this point had been in self-defense. Even Larry had been going for his gun. Shannon jabbed Chris in the throat again and brought me back to reality. There was not time for this. I put Beltran in between the others and me and fired into his back. To the other people in the room, it must have seemed like I had decided to kill him. That was not the case. His body armor would protect him. He would live. The conference room doors burst open, and grenades were tossed in. Tear gas started spewing from them. With burning eyes, I aimed my pistol for the door nearest me and fired at the first person who walked in. As he went down, I noticed that he was wearing a gas mask. Another had been about to enter behind him, but he stopped. By that time, half a dozen armed men had entered through the other door. Tom and Cherry were already down, and two men were wrestling Shannon to the ground. The man behind the one I'd shot entered, and he was followed by several more. I did not see a way out. I thought I recognized Martinez behind a gas mask just before I was clubbed in the back of the head. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.